Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are strapping on our analytical hats, I suppose, and diving into a book that really promises to make you a clearer thinker. We're unpacking Jordan Ellenberg's, well, deeply insightful work, How Not to Be Wrong, The Power of Mathematical Thinking.
Yeah, this is a really essential deep dive, I think, because the core mission here isn't just, you know, summarizing a book. It's about pulling out these mathematical ideas that Ellenberg shows are just universally applicable. He argues math gives you this kind of special x-ray vision, a way to look at, well, everything from voting to your finances and see the hidden structures most people just miss.
And wow, what a critical skill that is right now. I mean, we live in a world just completely saturated with data, right? And misinformation, cognitive biases, getting us tripped up constantly. Ellenberg's work really makes this powerful case that mathematical thinking isn't just some abstract thing you do in school. It's genuinely like intellectual self-defense.
Exactly. If you want to stop falling for, you know, dodgy statistics or flawed arguments, this is definitely for you.
So who's our guide on this journey then? Who is Jordan Ellenberg?
Well, he's a professor of mathematics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, got his PhD from Harvard, specializes in some pretty heavy stuff like number theory, algebraic geometry. He's definitely the real deal academically.
But what makes him so good for this topic, for making it accessible?
I think it's that he's one of those really rare people who can speak both high-level math and just, you know, everyday language. He's a top researcher, but also this gifted, funny, public intellectual, a great storyteller.
Like he did with his old Do the Math column for Slate.
Exactly. He can translate these really dense ideas into things that feel urgent and relatable.
And that accessibility is the key benefit for you, the listener, isn't it?
Absolutely. His approach isn't about throwing formulas at you. It's about showing the practical power, even the hidden beauty of math. He bridges that gap between the complex theory and just daily life.
He shows you how math helps you reason better, not just calculate faster.
Precisely. Which frames the central idea of the book perfectly.
Yeah. The title really says it all. Mathematics is fundamentally a way of thinking. It's about logic, rigor. It goes way beyond your high school arithmetic or geometry class. He basically argues that the goal is just to use these mathematical principles to avoid being wrong about things that actually matter. You know, your health, politics, money.
And what's fascinating is the core problem he points to. Our tendency as humans to just overlook or misunderstand these underlying mathematical structures.
Like what specifically?
Well, concepts like nonlinearity, probability, inference, we constantly trip up on them. And that makes us, frankly, really susceptible to being misled.
Right, like by an advertiser promising impossible growth, you know, or a politician giving a too simple answer. And the best part, you mentioned accessibility, this deep dive. The book itself, it doesn't demand more math than maybe high school level. It's really focused on the concepts.
Yeah, exactly. He walks us through things like linearity, inference, expectation, regression, and shows how they apply everywhere. Politics, health, lotteries, even voting systems.
Okay, so let's dig into some of those. Where should we start? Maybe with linearity. He calls it the straight line trap.
Yeah, that's a great place to start because it's arguably one of the most common and damaging errors we make.
You feel so intuitive though, right? Our brains seem wired to think linearly.
They are. It's the path of least resistance. Something goes up 5%, we just assume it's going to keep going up 5% forever in a nice, neat line.
Why is that impulse so dangerous, though, when we apply it to the real world?
Because almost nothing important is actually linear. Most real-world trends, phenomena, they bend, they plateau, they hit limits, they're nonlinear.
So we fall into this trap when we just project today's trend indefinitely.
Right, like those historical alarmist predictions he mentions, the one about the obesity epidemic.
Oh, yeah, where extrapolating linearly led to predicting every single American would be obese by, what, 2048?
Exactly. A textbook example of ignoring natural limits, saturation points, all that nonlinear stuff.
And a more complex, maybe politically charged example he uses is the Laffer curve in economics.
Mm-hmm. The debate often treats the link between tax rates and government revenue as if it were linear. You know, cut taxes, revenue always goes up, or raise taxes, revenue always goes up.
But the reality is a curve.
It's a curve. At some point, raising tax rates further actually decreases total revenue because people change their behavior, right? They work less, invest less.
Recognizing that nonlinearity is crucial for smart policy. regardless of your politics.
Absolutely. Okay, so if nonlinearity warns us not to assume trends just continue, how does inference help us deal with, well, not having all the information?
Inference. He calls it the art of drawing conclusions from incomplete or uncertain data. It's the art of being less wrong.
Less wrong. I like that.
And this brings us to probably the most famous story in the book, Abraham Wald and the WWII planes.
Oh, this is such a great one. It starts with intuition leading people astray, doesn't it?
Totally. The military wants to add armor, but weight is a huge issue. So they study the planes that came back from missions.
And they see bullet holes all over the wings, the tail,
yeah,
but hardly any on the engines or the cockpit.
So the obvious intuitive thought is reinforce the areas that are getting hit the most. Put the armor where the holes are.
Makes sense on the surface.
But Wald, the mathematician, spots the flaw immediately. What is it?
Survivorship bias. They're only looking at the survivors. The planes hit in those other areas, the engines, the cockpit, they didn't make it back to be counted.
Ah, so the real insight is?
The armor needs to go where the bullet holes aren't, because those are the hits the planes couldn't survive.
Wow, such a powerful counterintuitive lesson about looking beyond the data you can see, asking what's missing.
It really changes how you look at any data set, doesn't it? Okay, so moving from what's missing to assessing risk, let's talk about expected value.
Right, a key concept from probability. Expected value is basically the average outcome you'd expect if you could repeat a random event loads and loads of times. It's fundamental for making decisions when things are uncertain.
You usually think of it negatively, right? Like playing the lottery, the expected value is usually losing money.
Usually, yes. But Ellenberg tells this amazing real-life story about the MIT lottery syndicate.
It's the students who found a loophole.
Exactly. They used math to find a very specific flaw in the Massachusetts lottery rules. Under certain conditions, for specific jackpots, the expected value of buying a ticket actually became positive.
So they were mathematically expected to make money.
Yes. And they didn't cheat. They just bought tickets legally. But because the math showed a positive return, they basically gamed the system, bought hundreds of thousands of tickets, and made millions.
That's incredible. It really shows expected value isn't just for gambling theory. It has huge real-world implications for finance, risk.
Definitely. Okay, let's connect this to another everyday statistical idea, regression to the mean.
Ah, yes. The tendency for extreme results really high or really low to be followed by results closer to the average, things moving back towards the middle.
And the fun example he uses is the Sports Illustrated jinx, right?
Yeah. An athlete gets on the cover, usually after an amazing performance, and then suddenly their performance seems to dip. People cry, jinx.
But if there's no actual jinx, how does Ellenberg explain it mathematically?
It's simple regression. They likely got on the cover because they just hit an unsustainable peak, an extreme high, way above their usual average.
Okay.
So their performance afterwards isn't a curse. It's just a natural, statistically inevitable return towards their normal, still very skilled average level.
Huh. And never quite put that together.
Yeah.
And that mistake, failing to see regression, has big consequences, doesn't it? Especially for, say, managers.
Oh, huge. Think about it. A manager praises someone for an absolutely stellar outlier week. Next week, the employee's performance naturally regresses a bit closer to their average.
And the manager thinks, see? Praise doesn't work.
Exactly. Or, conversely, they really come down hard on someone for a terrible, uncharacteristic mistake. A low outlier.
The employee naturally performs better the next week, closer to their average.
And the manager concludes, ah, punishment, that's what really motivates people.
Oh, and really it was just regression happening anyway.
Precisely. We invent these causal stories for what's often just statistical noise evening out.
Ellenberg even takes us into more abstract territory, right? Talking about how math proves existence and how that relates to democracy.
Yeah, briefly. He touches on things like the Condorcet paradox. It's a bit complex, but basically shows that in elections with three or more candidates, the group's preferences can be circular.
Meaning what exactly? Like A is preferred over B, B over C?
But then, weirdly, C might be preferred over A. It creates a cycle, like rock, paper, scissors.
So there's no single winner who is clearly the true choice of the majority.
Potentially, yes. If preferences are cyclical like that, the winner might depend entirely on the specific voting rules or the order candidates are eliminated. It shows there can be these deep, abstract, mathematical challenges, even within something as fundamental as democratic voting. It proves math is way more than just counting.
Okay, wow. That's a lot of ground-covered linearity. inference, expected value, regression, even voting paradoxes. If we had to boil it down, what are the biggest thematic takeaways you think listeners should hold on to?
For me, theme one is maybe the most empowering. Math is really just an extension of common sense. It's not some totally alien thing.
Right. It sharpens our intuition.
Exactly. It formalizes it, makes it more powerful, less likely to make mistakes. Thinking of it that way makes math feel much less scary, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And for me, the big one is Ellenberg's constant reminder about theme two, the importance of what you don't see, that lesson from the WWII planes.
Survivorship bias again.
Yeah. The crucial information is so often missing from the data we're shown. We always need to be asking, who isn't in this sample? Or which studies didn't get published because the results weren't exciting? You got to challenge the data you're given.
Which leads straight into theme three, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Statistical literacy is just essential for modern citizenship.
Absolutely.
In this age of, you know, constant data streams, sophisticated marketing, partisan spin, thinking critically about numbers isn't just nice to have. It's a basic requirement for participating in democracy in an informed way.
The book is also packed with these really memorable lines that crystallize the ideas.
Yeah.
We should share a few of those key concepts, maybe.
Definitely. Starting with that survivorship bias lesson from the planes, his summary is just perfect. The armor doesn't go where the bullet holes are. It goes where the bullet holes aren't, on the engine.
Mm. It captures that whole counterintuitive insight so well.
It really does. And I love his definition of what math even is. He says, doing mathematics is being effective at thinking. It is a discipline of impossibly high standards of clarity.
That reframes it completely, doesn't it? Not just calculation, but a tool for intellectual rigor.
Yeah. And here's a great one for today's polarized world. The mathematical facts are the same whether you call yourself a Republican or a Democrat.
A reminder that math can offer common ground, objective analysis, if we let it.
If we choose to use it that way, yeah. And one more, a real call for vigilance when we see stats thrown around. To be sloppy about the definition of the denominator is a great way to lie with statistics.
Ooh, that's a good one. Always ask.
A percentage of what? It should be automatic.
Okay, so how do we actually use this kind of thinking day to day? Particularly maybe with, say, money or health decisions.
Well, practical application one. Personal finance and investing. Remember the Baltimore stockbroker parable Ellenberg uses?
The guy sending out prediction emails.
Yeah. Sends thousands, predicts market up for half, down for the other half. Next week, he takes the group he was right about, splits them again. After 10 weeks, a small group has seen him make 10 correct predictions in a row and think he's a genius.
When it's just selection bias. Cherry picking the winners.
Exactly. Use that story as a mental model to spot investment schemes that rely on that trick. And understanding regression helps you resist jumping on a stock after it's had an incredible, probably unsustainable run-up.
Okay, that makes sense. What about health?
Practical application two, health and media literacy. The book really arms you to be critical of those miracle cure headlines.
It's a regression to the mean.
Precisely. If a treatment seems to work wonders for someone when they're at their absolute worst, when they're an extreme low point, remember regression, they might have just been naturally returning to their average health state anyway, regardless of the treatment. Don't jump to assuming causation.
Good point. And for people in management roles.
Application three, professional performance evaluation. If you manage people, use regression to the mean consciously. Avoid over-rewarding one amazing, maybe lucky success or punishing too harshly for one isolated awful mistake.
Recognizing that extremes tend to move back towards the average leads to fairer evaluations over time.
Much fairer, much more rational.
So, wrapping up, what surprised or delighted you most about digging into this book?
You know, for me, it was just how successfully it transforms math. For so many people, it's a source of anxiety, right? But Ellenberg makes it a source of, like, intellectual wonder and real clarity. It really feels like a joyful defense of reason.
Yeah, I felt that too. And I guess my final thought for you, the listener, is the sense of intellectual humility the book leaves you with.
Mm-hmm.
It forces you to accept that randomness plays a much bigger role in things than our pattern-seeking brains want to believe. And the real power math gives us isn't certainty, but the ability to face that uncertainty with logic and reason instead of just, you know, clinging to comforting illusions.
Well said. Embrace being less wrong.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.